I collected the instruments of life around me, that I might infuse a spark of being into the lifeless thing that lay at my feet. It was already 1 a.m. The rain pattered dismally against the panes, and my candle was nearly burnt out, when, by the glimmer of a half-extinguished light, I saw the dull yellow eye of the creature open. It breathed hard, and a convulsive motion agitated its limbs. Who doesn't get chills when reading an excerpt from Frankenstein, the ultimate masterpiece, where the line between creator and creation blurs, and the true horrors of the human soul are revealed?
And 200 years later, pop culture is still fascinated with this story. And maybe one of the most unique adaptations was just released in theaters late last year, Poor Things. It has Academy Award winner for Best Actor Emma Stone, and she takes us on an incredible ride through the fantastical evolution of a young woman brought back to life by a brilliant and unorthodox scientist. Under his protection, she is safe, but hungry for the worldliness she is lacking, and she runs off with an unscrupulous suitor. On a whirlwind adventure across the continents, free from the prejudices of her time, she begins to understand her purpose and longs for liberation.
Hey everyone, welcome to Sorta Sophisticated, a podcast rooted in becoming more cultured and curious, where we endeavor to suspend judgment, expand our worldview, and learn to appreciate varying perspectives and values.
But really, it's a show where we hope to enlighten anyone who cares on topics that might make them more interesting and well-versed humans, and just dangerous enough to hold their own in this sophisticated world. Sort of.
I'm your host, Pete, here with my co-host, producer, director, engineer, artist, extraordinaire, Amanda, and today we'll be talking about one of the greatest stories ever written, Frankenstein.
And Poor Things, of course.
Oh, totally. Don't forget Poor Things. On the surface, these are science fiction stories about creation. And maybe the first science fiction story ever written. We'll get to that a little later in the podcast. But their real power comes from the philosophical themes they explore and the way they challenge the ideas of their time about the goodness of human nature. And to think Mary Shelley created the original story on a dare, one rainy afternoon in 1816, while trapped indoors by some bad weather, seeing who could tell the scariest ghost story.
All right, but can we pause for a second? Why was he named Frankenstein?
That was his last name, Dr. Frankenstein.
Oh, so he wasn't the monster.
No, he was not the monster. The monster didn't have a name. The monster was just referred to as the creature, like through the whole book. The title of the book, Frankenstein, comes from the name of the doctor who created him, Victor Frankenstein.
But, you know, after all of these years, I thought that the monster's name was Frankenstein. And I will say, in society, in pop culture, we refer to him as Frankenstein.
No way. Seriously?
I think so, because like the Bride of Frankenstein.
The Bride of Frankenstein? What's the Bride of Frankenstein?
The bride that Frankenstein created for the creature.
No, but that's like just a movie that they made afterwards. But technically, I think you're right. It's confusing.
It
should be the Bride of the Creature. Good point, because Fair. It wasn't like Victor Frankenstein's wife.
Thanks.
Okay. You're onto something there. Anyway, our word of the day today is abstruse. Our challenge is to work this word into the, I can't even say the word, and our challenge is to work the word into the podcast somewhere and make it feel like we meant to.
That sounds like a totally made up word. Did you mean obtuse? Like an obtuse triangle?
No, it's actually abstruse. I had no idea what it meant, so I had to look it up. It actually means difficult to understand or obscure. Like, gee, Amanda, you sure are abstruse.
Really? I kind of like obtuse better, but that's also coming from this math major on this side of the table, so. Why don't we get back to like the lit stuff, which was your thing in school? So who's Mary Shelley?
Mary Shelley. Mary Shelley was the author of Frankenstein. She was born in 1797, so we're going back away. And she was the daughter of some lady named Mary Wollstonecraft? I don't know. And she was a famous author of her time, a feminist author, writer. And William Godwin, a philosopher and a political writer. So she had it in her bones. But her life was a total shit show. Her mom died shortly after her birth, and she was primarily raised by her father and stepmom, like wicked stepmom. At 16, she fell in love with some poet named Percy Shelley, who was already married at the time. Go figure. Then Percy's wife committed suicide.
No foul play there. Like, not at all.
What is that all about? They eloped and traveled across Europe together. She gave birth to 5 children, but only one lived to adulthood. Not even two. Only one lived to adulthood.
So sad.
And then her husband dies in a boating accident when she's only 24 years old. It's terrible. So she died alone and sad.
It's super tragic.
Kind of is. She died in like 1850 or something. She was like 50 years old. But her legacy as the author of Frankenstein made it one of the most enduring works of English literature and continues to be celebrated and studied to this day.
It really seems like Shelley was jinxed from the beginning. But you know what the craziest part of it is that she went through all of this shit and somehow she was inspired to write this literary masterpiece.
People were just better back then.
Evidently. All right, Pete. So give me the brief synopsis of The Original Frankenstein by Mary Shelley, because I know you read it.
Are you suggesting that I tend to go long?
I mean, you're kind of like a history professor, so.
That's terrible.
But amazing, because you actually know your stuff. It's true.
Because I actually spent time to read the book?
Yes. I did not read the book. Thus, our partnership.
I'm starting to feel like this is not a good partnership. Anyway, the story follows Victor Frankenstein. Victor Frankenstein.
Dr. Frankenstein.
A young scientist who is completely enthralled with the mysteries of life and death. So he conducts countless experiments until he finally succeeds and creates a living being from various dead body parts.
Various body parts?
Various body parts.
Disgusting.
He literally puts them together.
That's disgusting.
Yeah. But as soon as he creates this thing, he sees how disgusting it actually looks, and he just abandons it and leaves it for dead. So now this creature...
Not the Dr. Frankenstein. We're going to do this the whole time.
Is totally alone and starts to experience all the sad shit that sort of comes with loneliness and rejection and all that kind of crap. So it's desperate for a little companionship and a little understanding, and it starts educating itself.
Wait. I thought Frankenstein. No, not Frankenstein. The creature. Was it he? Do they ever clarify that in the novel?
Really? It never specifically says in the novel that he attaches a penis. But he's referred to as he, so let's go with he.
Okay. Fair.
Anyway, he starts educating himself by being a total creeper and spying on this family from like some secluded place in a forest somewhere, and starts eavesdropping on all their conversations so he can learn English. Then he ransacks their cabin and steals some books and starts reading literature. Long story short, he figures out he wants a mate, and he finds Dr. Frankenstein and tells him to make him one or else, because after all, Doc created him, so it's kind of Doc's problem now. And so then Doc agrees, but ultimately destroys the female creature before its completion.
It's probably because he couldn't find a good vagina in the morgue.
What is it with you and the penises and the vaginas?
I mean, have you seen Poor Things?
I have. But I mean, it's not like he's finding a body part for a vagina and putting it. Like, that's like...
You said it was random body parts from like various people and things. Just saying.
Anyway. So the doc says originally, yes, he'll do it, but then changes his mind because he doesn't want to unleash another one of these creatures in the world. So now the creature's pissed because Dr. Frankenstein, like, reneges. So he goes on this whole revenge killing spree to haunt Doc. Anyway, without spoiling the ending, we learn about the dangers of this ambition of Dr. Frankenstein taken to the extreme and his pursuit of knowledge without any kind of consideration to the ethical consequences that were involved. And what makes Frankenstein so fascinating is that it serves as a reminder of the complexities of morality through the exploration of the human condition while pushing the boundaries of science to the extreme.
All right, Pete. Where were these nuggets prior to us watching Poor Things? I'm not sure when I was watching it gave me the Frankenstein vibes then, but now that you're making me sort of sophisticated with all of these details, I can see the parallels because truly... It gave me more of the 50 Shades of Grey vibe than Frankenstein. So can we talk about Poor Things for a hot second?
I'd rather talk about Dakota and 50 Shades of Grey.
Never saw.
Oh, okay.
Should I?
Okay, that's a whole nother podcast. But I don't know how that relates to like history or...
I mean, you could have a podcast about BDSM.
We could? I don't know. Is that for our listeners? We'll have to see. Anyway, if there's anyone who could bring... Frankenstein and a little soft porn together, it's me. I'm the man for the job. But joking aside, Poor Things isn't really a porn or anything. It does have quite a bit of nudity. And I understand how it could make some folks kind of squirm in their seats, but I'm not a squirmer. I'm an artsy guy. And I thought it was awesome. It's set in what looks like some Victorian retrofuturistic version of London or Ireland or Scotland or somewhere where this legit scientist creates Bella Baxter, who's played by Emma Stone, in a Frankenstein kind of way. She's his latest experiment, though the specifics of that are best sort of discovered on your own, because I don't want to give it away. She basically needs to let her body catch up with her head, and after a few interesting revelations, she discovers her sexual pleasure, and she launches on an odyssey of sexual and intellectual self-discovery.
Not going to lie, super impressed with the ingenuity of using an apple.
That was a good part. Anyway, Bella ends up wanting to explore the world sort of at this accelerated pace. So enter some dude who sees an opportunity to hang out with Bella and have a little fun, and he whisks her away on some international travel. So they enjoy doing stuff, I'll say.
AKA furious jumping.
Oh my God. Furious jumping. That was what she called, you know, it.
Pretty much the best line.
It's not just the furious jumping is one part, but the whole real part is that she's growing intellectually at like a super rapid pace through all of this. She has no filter. She's totally brash, borders on inappropriate, and she's generally not wrong. And it makes the movie hysterical, in my opinion. And so after she gets bored of the dude she's with for being stalled in low gear, she ends up being a whore at some Paris brothel. In part for the money, but in part really just to sort of see what the experience would be like, because it's satisfying both her physical and psychological needs.
I think this is where some people would say it goes a little over the top with the sex scenes, but I think we'd argue that it's all part of her evolution.
I'd argue it's part of her evolution. I won't spoil the ending, but basically she ends up being awesome and smart as shit, and she totally will.
I love how it's from a female lens, and I love how it is this story about her just becoming brilliant. However, how does this tie in with Frankenstein? That was from a strictly male lens. I mean, there are parallels.
There are some parallels. I ain't no genius, but I'll give it a rip, right? So for those of you that don't know, Poor Things was originally a novel written by Alistair Gray and was published in 1992. So it's been out for a while.
I also, in this moment, have realized that I need to not just to take a movie at face value, but I didn't know it was an adaptation from a book.
Most movies are adaptations. People are lazy as movie directors.
Really?
Whatever. Yeah, like most of them are now, which is cool, but at the same time, it's like, yeah. And those that get it right make it awesome. And I have not read Poor Things, so I do not know. And this is not a podcast about if the movie was true to the book. I'll just say that it's based on the book in 1992 written by Alistair Gray. And it's not a direct adaptation of Frankenstein at all. It does share some thematic and narrative similarities with Mary Shelley's novel, which makes the adaptation pair with the original, I'd say. So for one, they both deal with creation and reanimation. Think about it. Poor Things has a character named Bella Baxter who's brought to life through the combination of science and magic voodoo, I guess, by the eccentric surgeon Dr. Godwin, aka God. Similarly, Victor Frankenstein creates life from dead matter, various dead body parts, in Shelley's novel.
So both of them, essentially, recreating life.
Recreating life, absolutely. Both novels explore the consequences of human ambition and hubris. In Frankenstein, the doctor's desire to create life ultimately leads to tragedy when he abandons his creation, which then seeks revenge on him. And similarly, Godwin's actions in Poor Things have unintended consequences, highlighting the dangers of playing God and neglecting ethical responsibilities.
I think that's still prevalent today. We kind of think of like AI.
Yeah, except I'd say like in Frankenstein, the original, it was more like the dark side of what happens when left unchecked. And I would say in Poor Things, it's more of the bright side, right? Like you were talking about.
That's true.
Sort of her recognizing her all things feminism and how she sort of like ended up usurping every one of the guys that were in her life or created her or was trying to sort of keep her down. And she sort of pushed past all of them. So it's a little bit different. I think the storyline in Poor Things is, in my opinion, like number one, more modern, two, better, because it's a happier storyline. But they both deal with the idea of playing God. And then finally, I'd say they both touch on themes of acceptance, right? Like, so Bella struggles with her identity and place in society. She's discriminated against. She's marginalized. And this sort of goes along the same line of Frankenstein's creature, who's totally shunned by society for being different.
And I will say, I think today we're still dealing with that societal-wise of those feelings of marginalization.
I'd say now more than ever.
Discrimination. So.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. So it's totally still
relevant.
Still relevant today. So yeah, while Poor Things isn't a direct retelling of Frankenstein, it totally engages similar themes with a different and fresh perspective, in my opinion, on the concept of creation, identity, and the consequences of like human actions or human ambitions.
Seriously, though, the whole idea of Poor Things really blew my mind. I just love the way that Poor Things tied into the present, as we were talking about just being relevant today and using the motifs from the past from Shelley's novel. And it totally connected with different audiences on a different level, because as it deals with identity and feminism and seeing the world through a female lens, which most movies and things are not really portrayed through that lens, we see how when men try to control her in the movie, she revolts, but not in a destructive way, but more she's developing her brain and communication skills and outthinking them in ways.
This is also why I love you, because you're wicked smart and you can totally draw themes out of this that like other people wouldn't necessarily. I'm sure there's people who are like, oh, it's just too much nudity and don't like it. And I appreciate how your brain works, because I too thought it was a sort of victory for the female species.
Though it does still amaze me how after 200 years, we're still doing remakes of Frankenstein. So I go back to, what's the fascination with Frankenstein? Why is he such a big deal?
What are you talking about? He's 8 feet tall and green. Of course he's a big deal. Let me take a stab at this. So for starters, whether you knew this or not, Mary Shelley's novel is the earliest example of science fiction that we know exist.
Which makes sense.
Now the that starter of science fiction.
Right. I mean, creating this monster with some voodoo magic that didn't exist back in the 1800s.
Anybody who creates a genre in my book wins. Michael Jackson wins. The Beatles. Edgar Allan Poe wins. So the story's exploration of themes like ambition and the implications of scientific advances and the consequences if left unchecked were totally groundbreaking. This is 1816, people. This wasn't today, right? And two, it wrestles with the timeless themes such as the pursuit of knowledge and the dangers of playing God, like we discussed earlier, and the consequences of being isolated, and just the general complexity of human nature, all still relevant today. And then character complexity, baby. The characters in Frankenstein, like particularly Victor Frankenstein and the creature, are totally complex and multidimensional. Victor's ambition and then his subsequent guilt, and the creature's yearning to be accepted along with his insane drive for revenge, they're just mirrors into our human nature that still exists today. Just look to social media. It's all the same shit.
So just how Poor Things also dealt with today's moral issues, really we can extrapolate that from Frankenstein as well.
Yeah, I think so, right? I just look at acceptance. Look at teenagers today. Look at, like, what is it, not even Gen Z. Who's next? I don't even know. Whatever Gen, who's growing up on these on the phones, right?
They're like a tech generation?
I don't know. Maybe that's the next one. But all it is this acceptance, right? It's like, I need to like this. I click on that. Like, I recognize that folks don't want to necessarily pick up a book from 200 years ago, but all the same things are happening today. The ethical implications of science and technology still exist. Genetic engineering, we were talking about artificial intelligence and cloning. Those are all dilemmas that were first presented in Frankenstein, still resonate today. Empathy, Frankenstein's creature, prompts thoughts about empathy and acceptance, like we were just chatting about. Discrimination, marginalization, and social justice, all still relevant today. And identity and existentialism. Both Frankenstein and the creature struggle with their purpose and place in the world. I know I do every day when I'm driving to work in the morning, man. What brings me fulfillment? What do I do with my time left? What if I get hit by a car while I'm thinking about all this stuff? I mean, my head hurts just thinking about all this.
So I had this realization today, actually, about how I know I had Frankenstein at some point in time in AP Lit.
Sure.
But I didn't appreciate it then. I didn't appreciate all of these motifs and what Shelley was actually getting at, because I just thought it was dumb. But when you stop and you think about the relevancy of what that novel was about and applying it to today, it really is amazing to think about. It's been 200 years and it's still relevant. And sometimes I guess it does take something like Poor Things to bring that to our attentions, or to get people to actually want to know,
like, re-engage
a little more. Yeah,
like re-engage with whatever the platform is, or whatever in this case the
inspiration
book.
Yeah. And if we all just maybe took a little bit of time, we'd get out of from today and have learned from our past, right? Because don't we say history always repeats itself?
Absolutely. I do a lot of reading lately now, and my kids are all sort of grown up, but I was rereading a lot of these novels with them when they were young. And, you know, I love our teachers, don't get me wrong, they're doing the best they can, but It's weird. It's the timing's weird, right? You're 13, you're 15, you're in the classroom, you're not interested. If the teacher doesn't really connect with you, then you're sort of like, what is this? I really don't care. and you sort of stop paying attention, right? And I think if someone could take the time and get the kids' attention one-on-one, or, right, maybe join a book club in your early 20s, right, when you have a little bit more time to care and learn, I think it'd be fascinating, the things that you pick up and go, oh my God. I mean, think not just literature, in all cases, whether it's U.S. history, European history, whether it's government, whether it's religion or politics, I don't care. Like, we just blow through it in high school, and it kind of stinks. And I do the same thing.
But I also really think that as being adults now, we have such a problem discussing those things. And so if we are able to have a deep, thoughtful conversation, I think it opens a lot of doors, yeah. Which I think...
Cell phones down, ears open.
Engaging.
We are fighting
people.
Amanda, we're fighting a fight. We're fighting a fight.
But that's right? Also why I think this podcast is great, not to toot our own horns, but...
I hear you. Let's get more than one listener, and this will be awesome.
Right?
Yeah.
But that it is actually creating moments where people can engage on a different level.
That's the point.
And generationally, because I know we were just talking about the tech generation and all that, but it really is... I think a great way to think about life, and not just for this podcast, but just in general of
self-awareness, opening your mind, right? You got it.
Do you think we can have some fun fact time? I think it'll lighten up the mood.
Yeah, I think we could.
All right. So give me some cool.
I got a few fun facts. I don't have a lot.
Okay. So you're going to give me some cool stuff that we could probably Google on our own, but I'm too lazy to do so. So you're just going to lay it on me.
I am. Okay. It's all right. It's mildly cool. Mildly cool. Okay. So first, we know Frankenstein was the first sci-fi story ever created, right? But what you didn't know, that when it was first published, it was published anonymously.
Wait, what?
Yes.
Mary Shelley.
Anonymously, yes. Oh. No one knows for sure why, but some folks speculate it's because Mary Shelley was only 18 years old when she wrote it, and she was a woman, and that it wouldn't gain popularity because of that.
She was 18.
She was 18 years old. Yes. Which is terrible because her mother, if you remember this, was literally the first female feminist. Like, she started the feminist movement, basically. So you would think it was in her blood, but no. It wasn't until 2 years later that her name first appeared in the book when she was 20 years old. Up until that time, folks just assumed her husband, Percy, wrote it.
She would have been like, I mean, she is revolutionary.
She is. But here's my question. Did Percy let everyone think that he wrote it for 2 years?
I mean, for sure, right? Because if not, it would have
What's that all about? Is it like, who's not supporting who here? What's happening?
Well,
I'm sort of having a minute. Okay, check this out. Fun fact two. While there wasn't really a person named Frankenstein, like not even like a Victor Frankenstein, right?
Made up name.
There is a castle named Frankenstein.
Huh.
Never been there.
Where
it's in southern Germany, not too far from Frankfurt.
That makes sense.
Yes.
That tracks.
It's likely Mary got the name for her book from this castle because she probably visited it during her travels in Europe. And its name is nothing super notable. Like, Frankenstein means stone of the Franks. So whatever. Maybe the Franks were the name of the people that built the castle. And like, so those are stones in front. Yeah. So kind of an interesting one. Okay. Third, this real life castle Frankenstein I just talked to you about was the birthplace of a controversial and pretty weird religious dude named Conrad Dippel. Who is Conrad Dippel, you ask?
Yes, I have no idea.
Yes, I don't know either. This is why I had to look this up. This is what you need me for.
It's true.
He was an alchemist. Yes. Do we know what an alchemist is? By the looks of that, I'm going to say, no, you don't know what an alchemist is. Alchemy was like, they were trying to turn other metals into gold. Like, that was the whole concept of alchemy. It was like, oh, how are we going to do this? We're going to make all this stuff gold and whatever. But then it became associated with magic and then sort of like first doctors.
Like, I feel like this is like magical stuff.
Yeah, yeah. It's like pre-doctor stuff. But anyway, it all started with forging different materials into like gold, or they thought they could do that. But anyway, so he was an alchemist and spent years trying to create an elixir of life.
Huh.
Like, seriously. It's been claimed that his experiments involved explosives, black magic, and dead bodies. Though most probably a legend, it's very possible that Conrad was the inspiration for Dr. Frankenstein himself.
It's kind of cool.
Could he be the original mad scientist?
I mean, sounds like it.
Bum, bum, bum. We'll never know.
But so we can hypothesize.
Shout out to Conrad Dippel, the Dippy. All right. Finally, fun fact four. We know Mary wrote the novel for a contest, trying to come up with the scariest ghost story ever written. But she actually got it from a terrible nightmare that she had a few weeks before. of a vision of a man being brought to life by a giant machine. This is what she dreams about. When she wakes up, she starts work on the book immediately. She later said about the dream, "What terrified me will certainly terrify others." She wasn't wrong.
She was not.
There you have it. Those are my fun facts about Frankenstein.
I love fun facts. Good job.
Yeah.
All right, I guess it's time for the conclusion.
So as we close the chapters of our podcast on Frankenstein today, we still find ourselves echoing Mary Shelley's timeless themes of creation, responsibility, and the consequences of playing God. But beyond both the chilling narrative and the major motion picture lies a mirror reflecting our own quest for knowledge and power, urging us to ponder the ethical implications of our scientific advancements. I hope we can continue to carry the lessons we learned in Frankenstein into our own lives and not get trapped in the shadows of our own lack of self-awareness and responsibility to others.
Well, this was fun and all. Summing it all up here, Pete, what real-world crap can we really take away from this podcast and make it actually meaningful in life?
All right, here we go, peeps. First things first, watch Poor Things.
NSFW, P.S.
FW?
Not safe for work.
Seriously? I didn't even know that. That's what that means?
I mean, could you imagine
You're so much younger than me.
By a little bit. But could you imagine walking in on one of your employees?
Watching Poor Things?
Uh-huh.
That would be hysterical. All right, two. For extra credit, read Frankenstein. And if that's too much of a commitment, at least read the Spark Notes or get the Blinkist app and condense that shit, right? But somehow get some version of Frankenstein so you got an idea what's going on. Third, at your next social function, after you've introduced yourself to someone, ask what the last movie they saw was. Fourth, listen and feign interest.
Okay. Ask a few pertinent questions.
And then fifth, wait for a timely break in the conversation and tell them, "Hey, I just saw Poor Things," and ask if they saw the interweaving themes of the OG Frankenstein by Shelley in the movie. And then finally share these interesting and relevant details to seem sort of sophisticated. Frankenstein was written 200 years ago by Mary Shelley. Frankenstein was the doctor, not the creature.
Lesson learned.
Shelley created the actual genre of science fiction as we know it today. Poor Things is not a porno, but a movie through a female lens in a male-driven society. And Bella Baxter was effectively the creature born from recreation and reanimation. And finally, to blow everyone's mind, the biggest throwback in the movie to Dr. Godwin was a tribute to Mary Shelley's father, William Godwin.
Same name. When you said that earlier, when we're talking, you're telling me all about Mary.
Something about Mary?
Yeah.
It's another great movie.
I don't know if I've seen it. Anyways.
Stop saying that.
I evidently am not a big movie buff. I think I need to up my game here. But when you were talking about Mary Shelley and you said her father was William Godwin, I had that moment of, wait, God.
That was it. I didn't know it either. I didn't put it together either because I'm an idiot.
And there you have it, dear listeners. Thank you for joining us on this journey into the mysterious world. Wait for it. Wait. Abstruse world.
Oh, my God.
You're welcome, Pete.
Oh, my God.
Neck it in there.
Does that even work?
Right in
the
nick of
time. I think it does. Abstruse world. You're a dork. Okay.
Yep. The abstruse world of Frankenstein. We like to think we've shared just enough information to make you more sophisticated and either a flaming nuisance or a bit more interesting to your fellow humans. Sort of. If you enjoyed this episode and found it particularly enthralling, don't forget to subscribe, leave a review, and share with your peeps. Until next time, stay curious and stay inspired.